So I'm winging it, and I'm going to try to follow my notes to keep me from getting too distracted and off the topic, because then we'll cover like 3 minutes of the material that I want to cover. Oh yeah, by the way, look this up, and this up, and this up, and this up. So we don't want to do that. So, pardon me, if occasionally there's a small pause while I try to find my place in my notes. I have little notes to myself. Stick to your notes, baby. But this isn't on the notes. This just happens to be a song that I kind of use as a signature song. To me, it means a lot. Being, especially as a child of God, a Christian who is very different and seen as very different oftentimes in the Christian community, and you know, where we should be able to find the love and acceptance that you know, that we read about and that we hear about, and you know, oftentimes don't. And so for me, this song kind of means a lot. Some of you have probably heard it before. The only reason I'm doing this is because I have got me singing up.
That's good.
No, actually, I think
it's better. So that's why I'm doing it.
Okay. Here. Are you there? Hi. I said hi to the people at home. Hi, people at home. Okay. Now, where does the title come from? There's a T in my alphabet soup. Originally, it was was it originally? You guys know. Who put the tea in my alphabet soup? Yeah. And that comes from, you know, we originally were gay and lesbian, and then as we started adding more of us bisexuals and transgenders, we started going more with the acronyms. So now we're GLBT or GLIBIT. I thought of, when I first moved to Denver, they had a center, now it's just called the center, they called it the Community Center of Colorado, or the CCC. And that was kind of the resource for gay and lesbian, and as they started adding the other letters, they wanted to be inclusive, and so they became, eventually over several mutations, the gay and lesbian, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered community resource of Colorado, or the GLBTCRCC for short. So to put myself, tell you a little bit about myself using the acronyms that are somewhat common today. I'm an LT. I drive an SUV. My MOS was O2E. I just found out I'm ADD, not to mention ACA. I like BLT, but not PBJ. I worship with EBC and LCA. Anybody I probably... would identify myself, if pressed, as GWF. So I don't really identify, I don't self-identify with T, but it's part of who I am, and I do have some experience, and as a result of offering to be out a little bit more here as a T, I also now have a little bit of knowledge. It's probably just enough to be dangerous. By the way, my colleagues, or my intended colleagues, I've decided, are AWOL. Okay. Let's see. We're going to try to cover a lot. I'm going to try to get through this. That's why I'm going to keep coming back to these notes and see where I am, because I can go off on tangents, and I'll come back and then go, okay, didn't make it. So we're going to look at what is the T. What is the T? There's a lot of words, transvestite, transsexual, transgender. We're going to look at those. And why can we be so uncomfortable with that? Or with people when we encounter individuals that have this T characteristic? What is change about? How transition happens? We're going to try to get to the biblical and the faith issues this time. And what I really want to do, one of the things that has been very important to me, especially in bringing this issue to ECWR, is where does ECWR fit in? Or where does trans fit into ECWR? Does it? Does it not? Can it? And those are really valid questions that I think need to be examined. So what is the T? Transvestite, transgender, transsexual, transatlantic flight. we have a lot of words, and so we're going to try and maybe get a little bit of a handle on what the words are, and if there's any difference, are they all the same thing? One of the things we're actually going to be looking at is the difference between gender and sex, and I have paragraphs of research that I've done on that, and even in the dictionaries, the encyclopedias, writers of everything from sexual politics to sexual research, there's not necessarily a very clear difference. Probably about the closest I could come is that sex in its basic form has to do with either biology or the act, an act. And gender has more to do possibly with society. And with roles in a society. But that's really basic, and it doesn't cover it, and it just doesn't do it. To get into that, we'd really have to go deep. But just to have a concept that there might be a difference, or at least for the purpose of discussion that we have, sex can be the biological components and sexual act, and we'll eventually get into sexual orientation as well. Gender is the role. What kind are you, male or female? Well, that's what the doctor says when you're first born. That's sex. When it's what we see or what we believe about ourselves, then we'll go ahead and call that gender for now. Terms that will that I will be using up here include gender ID, gender identity, and that is your own sense of am I male or female, or what combination of the two. In most cases, most people have some characteristics or traits that they would say, well, that's a little bit more towards the other kind, but I'm mostly this kind. And then gender roles have more to do with, in whatever society we find ourselves, what are certain characteristics, what are certain behaviors, what are certain attitudes associated with one or another gender. You know, we find female welders and athletes, we find male cooks and nurses, for instance, you know, but the majority of the characteristics, we would still be able to say that's a male. Even the flamiest gay man here, we'd say that's a man. Probably. You know, and so that's kind of what gender role refers to, and it's usually a socially accepted norm of behavior and attitude, and usually in most societies there are differences. That's pretty much been the case since, well, I didn't really know Adam and Eve, but I imagine probably since as far back as we can trace history, there have been social differences between the sexes in a generic sense. So gender identity is the internal sense. The roles are characteristics that are kind of associated with that. Then there's gender assignment. Gender assignment starts at birth. That's when you pop out and the doctor says, this is a boy, this is a girl. No turning back. Well, we're finding out that the instance of probably ambiguous gender characteristics is greater than what has previously been thought, and it might not be quite as easy for them to say that, but we've also found that it's probably easier for them to, if the gender characteristics are ambiguous, to make that a girl than it is to make it a boy, depending on how severe or how pronounced the characteristics are. We'll talk briefly about some of that, but gender assignment is when somebody else looks at somebody and says, that's a boy, that's a girl, that's a man, that's a woman. And then we come to gender conflict. Gender conflict, or gender dysphoria, in varying degrees happens when the gender identity of a person is probably severely out of sync with the gender assignment. And so that's when I know I'm a girl, but I walk out the door and everybody says, sir, he, and so forth. Now, that eventually, from a very young age, becomes difficult to impossible to live with. And so then we get into a part of the T thing. However, there are different degrees of this going on, and so we can have, you know, people that don't need to fully make transition and still have a certain degree of gender conflict. And I would suspect that in this room or in this entire conference, there are probably a greater number of people that have experienced or still experience some degree of gender conflict. It seems to be a little higher in along with homosexuality, but gender identity and gender conflict, transsexualism, is very different from homosexuality. I forgot my little exercise here. Let's do it now. You remember this exercise from when you were in school, and your teacher would say, read this list. For you at home, the list says cat, horse, bird, mountain. Which one doesn't fit? Anyway.
Mountain.
Why?
It's not alive.
Because it's not a living thing. It's not an animal. It's very clearly different. Now let's look at the next list. Here's the next list for you at home. It is homosexual, bisexual, transsexual, and heterosexual.
Transsexual.
Which one doesn't fit?
Transsexual.
No cheating, George. Heterosexual, we say, because those others are all in our list of the glibbits. No. And so it must be heterosexual. Well, no. Actually, if you think about this, it's the transsexual, yeah. Because homosexual, bisexual, heterosexual all have to do with sexual orientation, with a sexual set of behaviors, affinities, and so forth. And transsexual does not have to do with that. Transsexual has to do with that identity, that inner identity, and the conflict with the gender assigned it. And it's an entirely different thing. It is a self image, it's a self-awareness, and it's not primarily about a relation to another person, attraction, affinity, orientation, and it's not primarily about sexual response, although there can be times during the process where there's a sexual element to it. Normally at this point I put in a little snippet of my story, but the one I picked doesn't seem to fit here, so we'll see if it fits somewhere else. Anyway, there's one more term that I want to define that we'll probably be using. It's called gender presentation. Gender presentation. And that is the image that a person tries to project. Are you trying to project male or female, or how do you interpret that? You know, some people interpret that, some men may interpret that as walking big, or women may interpret it as hair and makeup, or, you know, any number, anything across the spectrum. And usually when the gender presentation, no matter how different it might be from our expected gender roles, when the gender presentation is vaguely congruent with the gender assignment, we may say, wow, she's butch, but it's still, she's butch. There's no question about the gender of that person. When we start getting into people who have really either conflicting presentation, or you know, they're in transition, they have a very androgynous presentation, we'll talk about that. So I'll use the word presentation for gender presentation, and that means how a person is putting him or herself out there at any given point. Now, why does this subject, and particularly why do a lot of the people that are at some stage in exploring this process make us so uncomfortable? It's a very, very good question, and I think it's a valid question. I think that we really need to think about it. We can't dismiss it, and we can't say, I'm prejudiced, or I'm bad, or I feel bad because of something, and we can't look at somebody else and judge them and say that. No, I'll present a few ideas why, or at least why we might want to consider not, and, you know, consider being a little more lenient with ourselves. To do this, usually I do an exercise that I call the name-calling exercise. I'm going to shorten that, but to give you the idea. What are some of the names that we've been called as? Okay, that's the part I'll shorten. As gay people, think of the names that we've been called. You know, queer, faggot, and things like that, and even worse. Now, think of some of the names, some of the words that come up when you think of someone that's transsexual or drag queen or whatever. You go ahead and say, hold me shy.
Freak.
Come on, you know.
Confused.
That's a really nice one. Okay, let's see. He, she. Chicks with dicks.
She male.
I've heard those in relation to the gay community,
you usurp those, you take those back, you know, just like the N-word, and now that the African American community has taken that back, and it tends to take the power out. Just like queer. Queer used to be a very bad word, and now it's pretty much, you know, for most people, it's an acceptable way of describing ourselves. You take that back. You take the power back. But these are not nice words most of the time when somebody says a fishy or a you know, whatever. And
well, the biggest thing that I've heard actually isn't so much a word as a phrase, because I think so much of the prejudice that I've heard is within the GLB community, and so often it's like people just assume that anyone who is transgendered has to be gay without it.
And we'll look at that. You know, that's coming up. But there is usually, especially if it's a real odd and conflicting presentation, then people are going to be a lot more subject to ridicule. I remember in my own life, some of the first times that I really recognized that there was something wrong. Now, you always know there's something different, but up to a certain point, you're okay with it, and you're just yourself. And then you start getting into social situations, such as when I was in probably about first grade, and I was playing house with some of the kids, and we played house all the time. And you know, when you start playing house, you have to decide who's who. And I said, I'll be the mom, which I always was. And they said, you can't be the mom. And I said, why not? And they said, because you're a boy. And I said, well, I'll be the sister. And they said, you can't be the sister. Why not? Because you're not a girl. Well, then I'll be a girl. What's the big deal? And they insisted, and I started getting the idea. Another example, probably about third grade, and this one was really a huge turning point for me in my life. We were in the boys' room playing with my mom, roughhousing and stuff and laughing, but my sister was not allowed in the boys' room, and so she was standing outside, and she tried to come in to play because we were having such a fun time, and we'd tell her to get out. And finally she stomped off saying, I wish I were a boy, and ran to her room and slammed the door. Well, pretty smart kid here. I thought, aha, here's my opportunity to find something out. So I said to my mom, why does Jenny want to be a boy? And she said, well, it's natural to be for girls to want to be boys, because boys get to climb trees, and they get to run, and they get to do all the fun stuff, and girls, you know, they have to be kind of nice, and they have to be pretty, and it's, you know, just not quite as fun sometimes to be a girl. My mom, perhaps sensing something in my question, went on to say, but if a boy were to want to be a girl, that would be very, very bad. And I don't know exactly what was said after that, if anything, but in my mind, I pictured some kind of steel doors or padded room or whatever, a third grader pictures of this scary place with people telling you that you are not right. And so I knew that I better not let anybody know that this was going on. Question is, why are we so uncomfortable? Now, I personally have some theories about this that I haven't read, but I suspect that gender and sexuality was probably invented for the purpose of carrying on the species. That I have read. It probably wasn't invented so that we can have a wild time. It was invented so that we would keep making more of us. And as such, if you think in terms of evolution, if you will indulge me, for those of you who might not want to go there, it's a very primitive, I mean, it goes back to, you know, even in terms of humans, it goes back to our very beginnings. And so probably the elements of pleasure were added to help encourage us to procreate. But because it's very primitive, And because it's so absolutely essential, the most essential component to any species, if you ask a biologist, is procreation. Because it's so essential, I think some very primitive part of our brain has to say, is that a man or a woman? And we have to know whether we are homosexual, heterosexual, or what, we have to know if that other person is a man or a woman. Whether we're a man or a woman, we have to know if that other person is a man or a woman. We have to know that fast. Because speaking from nature, it's either somebody as a potential mate or somebody as a potential competitor for a mate. We have to know that fast. We have to know it instantly. What's the first thing that you ask, or that anybody asks, when somebody has a baby?
What's the sex? What is it? Boy or girl?
You don't ask what? Okay, never mind. Okay, what is it? Yeah. What kind is it? What is it, a boy or a girl? First thing you ask, you know? And this is, this idea of gender is determined so quickly and so instantly, and I will also suggest so immutably, that once you have made a determination what gender is, what gender someone is that you're speaking to, it's very difficult to get over that. And if you do miss that, even in a genetic sense, even with a genetic person, if you miss it, it's still very hard. You need some very, very, very convincing clues in order for you to be able to alter that initial instant assessment. Does anybody remember the skit from Saturday Night Live?
Pat.
Pat.
Yes. Hilarious.
Hilarious. And we, you know, I don't know if people thought about that, but if that were to actually happen, if there was somebody that was so in the middle and so androgynous, I really believe that we would be just like that. So, Pat, are you dating anyone? They could not talk about, think about anything else mm-hmm. around Pat until they could make a determination what the gender was. There, you can't go anywhere. We need a sense of that gender. And I think that's much deeper than simply a social idea. I do think it goes to some biological root. So, you know, for the first part of that, I think we have to accept that we have some grounds to be uncomfortable, perhaps, around people when we cannot recognize their gender, or when the gender that they're presenting so conflicts with our initial assessment of what the gender of the person might be.
A kind of compounded question. First of all, just to reinforce what you're talking about, they've done some marvelous studies with a biochemical called pheromones mm-hmm. and picking up things in the nose, whether or not, you know, we respond. And there's all sorts of research on how gay people versus heterosexual people respond to this pheromone. But anyway, compound question, because sexual orientation, sexual and gender identity, as you know, exists in all mammalia, and a lot of these sub-classifications. We're the only species who seems to pick on people who don't seem to fit the mold, the traditional molds. Giraffes don't kill each other.
Chimpanzees do.
Hmm? Chimpanzees are primates, mm-hmm. and they're very close cousins to us. Okay, mm-hmm. But giraffes don't, and they're very homosexual. You have all sorts of other kinds of mammalia that don't.
Okay.
So there's another element, and that's partially mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, then we are talking about social elements, and we're talking about acceptance, and we're talking about tolerance, we're talking about knowledge, and we're talking about learning, we're talking about exposure, we're talking about those kinds of things. So I am not by any means suggesting that because we have an initial reaction that's uncomfortable, mm-hmm. that cannot be somehow dealt with. But I'm saying, I'm suggesting that if you do have that reaction, don't be too hard on yourself, and don't don't necessarily decide I've got to run the other way because I'm afraid I'm going to hurt this person or offend this person. You can say, this is a natural thing to happen, and so let me deal with it. And that's kind of what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that that might not ever go away entirely, or there might be some person. I have it. I've met a lot of transsexuals in my life, and I still have that thing, especially for someone that's not presenting very well, that says, I'm not really comfortable with this person, and, you know, here I am sitting in a restaurant in public where everybody could see me, and, you know, I still have it.
Have you heard that book? Someone told me about it, and I haven't had a chance to read it. It's about a little boy that was born, and they went to circumcise him, and the doctor really messed it up. And have you read this book? I don't know.
I haven't read the book. I've heard some of the interviews.
Yeah, and they messed it up, so they basically turned him into a girl. And then, of course, he spent his entire life as a girl, wanting to be a boy, and that whole... And ultimately got changed back to a boy later in life when it was up to him. I haven't read the book, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's just it's a true story.
And it is a sad story. What a great segue into the next section, socialization as a boy or a girl. And we tend to, or some theories tend to say that our whole idea of gender is a construct. You know, Kate Hornstein, you mentioned Virginia Randy Mollicott, and, you know, they suggest that, you know, we should all be the same. And I think that the studies are showing that there are differences. Now, perhaps the idea of equality should be, advanced and things like that, that we are equal and that women can do anything, you know, and so forth. And those things I think are good because we are not, even as women or as men, we're not all the same. And all men aren't the same, all women aren't the same, but there are notable general differences between women and men, okay? But I think there's also varying degrees of perhaps a gender dysphoria, and a lot of them are very acceptable and very livable within the gender. I think this tends to be a lot more prevalent in women. There tends to be, especially nowadays, a lot broader available options for expression for women. And so a lot of women, even with a significant amount of gender conflict, may not have to go through the entire change process, transition process, and change their gender. Whereas with males, there tends to be a much narrower acceptable range of expression for males. And so a lot of times, if a male finds himself significantly gender conflicted, there are a few options for expressing that. And most of them are not considered widely acceptable by most of society. So they end up in the marginal societies, the drag queens, the female impersonators, the transsexual, and perhaps even the transvestites. Most of the time, these rules that we have are so powerful that except for a transsexual that has it so strongly that they cannot resist it. We try to resist it. We try to fit in. We realize that we can't change. You can't change. And so you'll do anything you can to fit in. So when you finally do realize that you cannot resist this any longer, it's going to kill you if you don't find a more acceptable way to express yourself. Then they start going through transition. Well, what happens almost most of the time, you know, unless now some kids now are getting lucky and they're finding out when they're 17, 18, 20, in their early 20s or even to their late 20s, they're finding out and they're finding resources and they're finding support and they're able to start making this transition. But for a lot of people, that may not happen until they're in their 30s or until they're in their 40s. Now, you have an idea when you haven't been able to express and to grow with this female identity that you have. Generally, you still have an idea of whatever that identity was when you first started fantasizing, living it in whatever fashion you were able to, which wasn't in society. So you haven't matured as a woman would in society, and so what happens is you get a 45-year-old heavy man wearing a cheerleader outfit. Mm-hmm. And long, curly locks, walking around in law with high heels. And you look at that and you go, oh my God, what is it? You know, and so then you've got also, besides the gender conflict, you've got an age conflict. And so that's one of the things, hopefully, you know, when people find a resource, and a good resource, you know, if you want to prance around in your cheerleader outfit here in the group, well, we'll try and tolerate that, but let's work on your presentation outside. You can probably make an attractive or at least passable 45-year-old woman, but you're not going to be a 17-year-old woman or 17-year-old girl ever. So that's one of the things then that, you know, the age conflict then compounds that whole presentation conflict that we can get into. I want to check somebody for the time. What time are we at? Almost 1:35. Okay. All right. 1:45. I know that. Okay.
3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about the difference between someone's transvestite and transgender.
Man, you guys are just right on. I seriously didn't plant these. You're right on it. Okay. To look different, well, to further confuse matters, I have in my notes other similar manifestations from transgender. Now, we didn't really talk yet about the trans words, transgender, transsexual, transvestite. Did I mention transatlantic flight?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, transgender, generally speaking, and I'm using generalizations here, and I'm also using kind of definitions that I can use to be able to speak to you so that we can get on the same page. So I think of transgender, once again, thinking of the whole idea of gender, social identity roles, assignment, transgender crossing gender. And so that could include, it's kind of an umbrella term, it could include anybody who has that gender crossing tendency, not just where a woman wears a tool belt, but where it's significant enough so it goes beyond a trait or characteristic, so it goes into a identity presentation intent. It can also include the drag queens, which usually are mostly kind of a gay, it's a kind of a gay male phenomenon. I saw drag kings last night though, that was cool. Usually considered a gay male phenomenon where, I haven't really done too much research on it, but it's a flamboyant, over-the-top kind of characterization of women, and perhaps done for some sexual gratification or attracting mates, or just for some other kind of expression. There's the female impersonators, which usually are can almost have a similar look to the drag queens, but usually then what we're looking at is an actor. Somebody who can, and there may be a significant or small amount of gender conflict involved, but this is somebody who can totally get out of their own self and totally get into a character. And that can be very satisfying for an actor or a person with that kind of personality, somebody that likes doing, you know, being somebody else, and the things that you can do as somebody else that you could never do as yourself. And the further away, you know, you hear actresses say, I love playing the bad girl, you know, and they're nothing like that, but they can be so evil on stage or on the screen because it's so far from what they are, and that's a very satisfying experience for an actor. We have transvestites, which most studies are showing that a large number of transvestites are actually heterosexual men, and they enjoy dressing up. There's some sexual gratification. There's probably some degree of gender conflict somewhere, but they have no desire to become women or to live as women, except for those, you know, some of them go to the point where they like to go out. Some of them will even express as homosexual when they're dressed, even though they do not identify as that any other time, but they might experiment or express that way. But that's kind of an interesting phenomenon. A lot of them were married. I actually met quite a few who like to dress up and go out, and it doesn't seem to have anything to do with wanting to be a female, and actually most of them would be appalled, scared to death at the idea of mutilating their bodies like that.
Just a quick commercial that I live near Provincetown on Cape Cod, and every year there's a large convention.
Mm-hmm. The Trias, is it?
And that's, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they show up with their families, but most often mm-hmm. the wives and children. And it's in October in Provincetown, right after Women's Week.
Virginia Princeton, Ariadne Kane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we will mention the hermaphrodite intersex, they're starting to call more intersexed, and that's mm-hmm. the situation where you have an ambiguous gender characteristic at birth. Now they're beginning to resist making that initial assignment, and they're allowing the ambiguous gender characteristics to remain until they can determine by personality or by tests or whatever other ways they can determine which way that child leans, so that they have a better possibility of guessing right and avoiding the situation with the case you were talking about. Now, the other complication that I want to get into, and I know I'm going to have to skip some stuff, so I have to pick and choose here, but the other complication or complication to the idea that I want to get into is sexuality versus identity. Gender identity versus sexual orientation. And how does that work? Growing up by junior high and high school, when I was starting to come into sexual awareness and my body was coming into sexual response, I also knew, I was attracted. I was attracted to girls from very young age, you know. And as a boy, that's natural, you know. Of course, people said I was girl crazy, but you know, it's still an okay thing for a boy to be. But I also knew that I wanted to be a girl. I prayed that I could be a girl. I believed in God. I believed so much. And if that God can do all those things, then I know God can change me into a girl, because I was supposed to be. I knew, kindergarten, first grade, I knew one day I'd wake up and be a girl, you know. Then I started thinking, well, maybe I'll grow out of this boy thing. I'll grow to be a girl. And then, you know, finally came to realize that that is not going to happen. But I still noticed by the time I was in junior high that my sense of girls, my attraction to girls was very much, very different than that of the other boys around me. The way that I felt it, the way that I expressed it, was very different from theirs. And they talk like, you know, I just want to see her naked, I just want to jump her bones, I just want to get her into bed. And I was thinking, first of all, they're thinking, wow, I want to be with her, and I'm thinking, wow, I want to be her. and it wasn't so I could be with you either. but anyway, I felt, wow, I want to touch her. I want to touch her hair. I want to look into her eyes. I'd love to touch her face. I'd love to be close to her. You know, kind of thing. That was the, what I was feeling at the same time the other boys were. and that was different for me. So when I'd express that, they'd tell me either I was a liar, or they'd tell me I was gay. And so that was another thing. Well, you start thinking about that. If you want to be a girl, who said it over here, you must be gay. You know? If you want to be the other sex, you must be gay. And so, you know, that's a pretty common misconception. So when I got to high school and into being able to drink enough to even consider it, I would go there to about halfway down first base, and I'm going, whoa, no. I mean, I considered it, and I had friends that were willing, and I could not even get off home plate. And it was not because of any kind of social or prejudice. It was not in me. It was not in me. And I still was very attracted to girls and women, you know, as I grew up. So what about sexual orientation? Kim Elizabeth Stewart wrote a book, mid-80s, I think, called The Uninvited Dilemma. I think it's a really good book. It's not the typical clinical, statistical, and even scientific book. It's just based on her interviews with 75, I think, transsexual people in various stages, and some, I think, considerable time following them. And she asked a lot of personal and social and practical questions of them to see how they responded. And she didn't spend a lot of time on sexuality, you know, sexual orientation per se, but she estimated that probably about 10% of transsexuals are homosexual, meaning that in their new role, they relate to and are attracted to people of that gender. I've heard other studies say that possibly as many as 40% of male to female come out lesbian, and a much smaller percentage of female to male come out gay. However,
I was just going to say, my friend Michael is gay, and he certainly is female to male.
And so there are those instances, and I've always thought, and as I was reading Kim Elizabeth Stewart, the way that she puts it is that the orientation may change or the orientation may stay the same. So in other words, in your old role you may be gay, and then in your new role you're gay. And so in your old role you were attracted to one kind, and in your new role you're attracted to the other kind. Or, you know, any of the four combinations you can see of those. And then of course there's the bisexual somewhere in the middle that probably is still bisexual, maybe. But
statistics on how many people's orientation changes with their...
There probably are. There probably are, especially now. Most of the resources that I'm very familiar with at all are probably 12, 13, 14 years old now. I have a bibliography here that was done about 5 years ago, and I'm sure there's even more information available now. So please take this bibliography. It's arranged by when these things were written too, so it's really useful. The stuff that was written in the 60s and before takes up this much space. And then the 70s is about a half a page, and then, you know, on into the 90s, we're really starting to learn more. But the idea that I was putting out there is not necessarily statistics, but the fact that you really can't confidently tell who you're attracted to until you can confidently tell who you are. And as it turns out, I was attracted to girls and women growing up very strongly. When I went through my transition and started being able to present confidently as a woman, I thought, well, you know, I'm willing to see what's up here. I'm willing to open up the options and make sure I'm, you know, now knowing who I'm going to relate to. And I tried dating some men. And I didn't like sitting next to them because I didn't like the way they smelled. I didn't like them touching me. I did not like kissing them. I didn't like the hair. I didn't like the skin. I didn't, you know, it was just, I tried.
I tried, folks. I didn't like the approach. You know, I didn't like their mentality. I love talking to men. I love talking to men. But when there's this, you know, they're like, I'm gonna get myself to me. Thing going on, you know. How, no matter how subtle that might be, it's there, you know. And it was like, well, a few years later, I dated a woman for the first time as a woman. And the first time she kissed me as a woman, I had the fireworks, the volcanoes, the hallucinations, the tingles, the whoa, holy cow, what was that? And I went, okay, this makes sense to me. So, anyway, now Randy Cunningham, who I had present with me the very first time I did this workshop, I really wondered, because he said I was totally natural when he was a female, and it was totally natural, it was totally, there was no conflict that I could sense, or that even looking back that I could sense, as a woman, for getting married to a man, having children, having a family like that. And he says, now that he's male, he's married to a woman. And so Kim would say, Kim Stewart would say, that he was heterosexual before, or she was heterosexual before, and now he's heterosexual after, so his orientation didn't change. She would say, my orientation changed. I'm thinking, I was attracted to girls before, I'm still attracted to girls. Well, how Randy explains that, he says, you know, I have this, there's such a deep-seated idea, paradigm, of what the one-flesh relationship looks like. And it's male and female. And that has nothing to do with a moral judgment or anything like that. That's just my totally inner sense of how that is. And so, for me, when I was female, I was completely comfortable within my whole framework of being with a man. Now that I'm a man, I feel exactly the same level of comfort within my being with a woman. And they are very active in the gay community still, and in the trans community. And so it's not a matter of a prejudice, or, you know, it's just, that's how that worked. And that was fascinating to me, to hear how that one worked. Anyway, so you really can't always tell what the orientation is going to be once you get through your transition. I want to have room for questions at the end, and I'm going to kind of skip over some of this information that I have covered in your previous seminars. So if you need some of that information, get the tags. Okay. Did anybody bring a Bible? I didn't either. I brought my Bible this time. Usually I bring it. But where in the Bible? Where in the Bible does it say that being transsexual is sinful? Or where in the Bible can we point to, you know, depending on where you are in your own reconciliation, in your own study of the issue of homosexuality, we might now be able to say, well, it doesn't really say in the Bible that homosexuality is sinful, but where are the verses that can suggest that transsexualism is sinful?
Is that in Leviticus?
Nope.
Without a woman,
you're
in
clothes. You've got the right idea.
Clothes.
It's in Deuteronomy.
Okay.
Deuteronomy 22:5 says, and I didn't even copy it down. I probably have it in here somewhere, but I didn't look for it. That a man shall not wear the clothing of a woman, nor a woman that of a man. It's just slightly longer than that, but that's the only place where it's very clear that says you don't dress like the other sex. Okay, well, if you look at pictures from the Middle East back then, they pretty much dressed about the same. So what does that mean? How can you wear the clothing of the opposite sex? Well, we have a couple of interpretations here, and actually I participated, I helped develop and participated in a class that a friend of mine in Denver does. Maureen Warfield does a class called God and Gender, and it's kind of like us approaching and asking questions about the clobber passages, and she goes into a great deal of depth about just a very few passages. Her approach is designed to open the idea up to some of the people that she's teaching. It's a little bit of an evangelical tool for her, is that she's offering the opportunity for people to say, you know, tell me more about Jesus. And so she does present some of that stuff too at the end, the idea of Jesus the Savior and grace and as the complete redemption and so forth. And it's pretty cool the way she does it. But so I've got everything that she's done at home and haven't really gone through it, but she's done a lot of work in that. Basically, some of the work that I did on that particular passage, Matthew Henry, one of the respected Bible commentators, says that only males could be priests, and only males could enter the temple. We know that males had privilege, and females had, were just under cows, literally, as far as stature in the society. And so a female going into the temple would be unclean, that would be abomination. And so Matthew Henry says, he doesn't even address going the other way. He doesn't even address the male wearing the female's clothes. Of course, why would he? What male would ever want to look like the female? That just wouldn't happen, right? So he addresses the female trying to masquerade as a male to get into the temple, and that's abomination. So that's why that verse is there. Adam Clark, another respected commentator, talks about the word actually for the clothing of the male is kaligaber or something like that, and it that has to do with instruments of armor and arms. And so a woman is not to wear armor, and a woman is not to be a warrior, a woman is not to take up the position of being a warrior. Once again, he addresses the woman side of things, and this doesn't even consider that it would be possible that a man would ever want to wear a woman's clothes. So Joan of Arc, of course, is guilty of going against this commandment. And Adam Clark goes on to say that it had for them, for the women wearing armor, it is related to the worship of the Ashtaroth and the Ashtart, the Venus, because she was a warrior. She was an Amazon, what we would call an Amazon, strong woman, and they used that imagery in the other cultures that worship the false gods, and so that would be similar to some of the things we see in sexual prostitution and temple worship, and so that would be a good reason for that law to be in there.
You did bring up Joan of Arc issue, and that's part of how they got her burning at the stake, and then they gloss over it when they canonize her. They told her. I wanted to throw that in. They did use that as part of the prosecution against her. She goes as a man.
Okay. So that's one of the, that's probably the main verse that could be used against us. The other verse is in the New Testament, and you guys ought to know this one. But you might not know well enough to realize that it says effeminates. I can't remember if 1 Timothy also says that, but in 1 Timothy 6:9, neither the abusers of themselves with mankind, nor the, in the King James, but in the NIV and the NASB, it says neither the homosexuals nor the effeminate. And so that is this.
Mm-hmm. In Matthew, however, it says some men are eunuchs born, some men are eunuchs.
Hang on.
Okay, stop. All right. I have ADD. Leave me alone. Okay.
So if you do look at that one's pretty well addressed in most of the clever passages that deal with the sexuality issues. When we look at that, molokoi is the word for effeminate. They're suggesting that it has to do with some of the pederastic institutions. There's other suggestions that it has to do with some prostitution. And basically, that word means soft clothing. It's a little bit enigmatic, and so it can merit a lot of study, but just keep in mind that that's one of, that also is used against the transvestite, transsexual issue. Now, I've actually run into a lot of Christians who are very vehemently against homosexuals, homosexuality, homosexual behavior, etc., that when they meet me, they go, well, I don't think, you know, I don't understand it, but, you know, if God made you that way, then, you know, I can deal with it. When talking about transsexualism, when talking about homosexuality, it's a different story. Nope, God said it. It's right there in print. I believe it. That is it. End of story.
Does that have anything to do with your current orientation?
No, because when I tell them I'm also a lesbian, then they start going, okay, you know, I wonder how, but, you know, but if you're, well, let's see, she was a man before, so if she's attracted, it's, yeah, it messes them up. But then I also advocate for the homosexual situation in general, and so then they learn to hate me. Now, Matthew 19:12, where Jesus says, there are eunuchs that were made that way by God, there were eunuchs that were made that way by men, and there are eunuchs...
made by choice.
Choice. And this is also, will sometimes appear in some of the... when you get to the positive passages or positive information for gay and lesbian people. But...
you didn't finish it. May I finish it?
Okay.
It says, let them accept it through them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Accept it through them?
Let them find acceptance of it. Let them accept it through them.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And that's, I think it's an amazing passage. And if you look back at Isaiah and Acts 8:27, the very first convert was a eunuch, the very first non-Jewish person to receive the treasure of the kingdom of heaven under grace was a eunuch. And that was prophesied in Isaiah. And you think about the eunuch and the gay community who has chosen to study this or include it has talked about the, you know, the similarity they have. And in a way, there is some similarity. I think that's a valid thing to look at. But in even a deeper way, when you think about transsexual, they have eliminated their ability to truly function as a biological sex as we know it. Female to male cannot reproduce once they've finished enough of the change. Their sexual organs are removed. The phallus is marginally functional. There are a lot of improvements going on, but they can't achieve a full erection on their own. There are prostheses and apparatus used to achieve a certain functionality, but it's not a biological function. For the male to female, briefly, we will never have children. I've actually heard some people saying there may be, in the future, they're looking at the possibility that we could be looking at transplants and that might change. But at this point, once you go through the surgery, you are sterile. Or once you start into hormones, you're sterile after you've gone for, you know, just not... you know, too extended amount of time. Once you've gone through the surgery, then you have no more ability to produce children. And so, you know, I think in those terms, you really are a eunuch in that way. And I think that verse is wonderful, and I would like to spend more time on it. It's on the tape, so we'll need it for your CD.
So not on the reproductivity, I was speaking with a friend of mine, Judy, who does a lot of work in the young, especially the younger transgender community, and a lot of them, I guess primarily the female to males, are choosing to have children prior to their change, so that they have that.
And some of the other technologies that are available to them now, even if they're not ready to have children, but still are eager to go through the change, they can have their sperm and their eggs preserved, so that at some later date they can have natural, you know, children, not through the natural process, but their natural genetic children. There's amazing options now. Doing stuff like that. Okay, so now, what time is it?
It's 2:12.
Well, cool. Cool. This is the first time I've gotten to this point. Usually I'm going, oh yeah, don't forget to think of this, you know, for next year. And this is a good thing to kind of jump off of, and so I'm going to try to be brief here, because then we can go into this as well as any other questions you might have. As I mentioned, what I wanted to get to is, where does ECWR fit into this? We have GLBT in our literature now. We say that, you know, the T is included. We started, we started looking at where the B is, because we started looking, thanks to, I think, just my being here, we started looking at the T a few years ago. But now we're starting to go, okay, what's the B? What does it mean? Because a lot of us aren't really comfortable with the B either. And so now we're starting to look at the T. And as I mentioned, some of the things to think about, where do we fit in? As I mentioned, a lot of transsexuals end up not being gay. Okay? But one of the things I didn't mention is that for a lot of transsexuals, you know, you've desired to be the opposite your whole life. You haven't desired to be a freak. You haven't desired to be a he-she. You haven't desired to be a spokesperson for some fringe group. You've looked at, you know, women or men all your life, and you've thought, I don't want to be that. You know, you want to have kids, have a job, go about your life, go fishing on Sundays. Say hi to Fred when he's mowing his lawn, you know. You don't really want to be, you know, whatever the idea of different is. You want to be normal. And so a lot of transsexuals want to be able to go through the change. They want to do whatever it takes to fit into society, and then they want to blend in and disappear. Okay? Now, hanging out with a bunch of gay people is not necessarily a good way to disappear, at least if you're going to be out at work and you're going to be out at, you know, wherever. Then there's going to be some question, and especially if you find out that your orientation is straight. Okay, if you find out your orientation is gay, then you get comfortable with hanging out with gay people and you come out as a gay person, and that makes sense to people. Well, yeah, duh, no wonder. But if you're straight and you're trying to blend in and you're hanging out with a bunch of gay people, people go, no, I thought she was straight. Why is she hanging around with all the gay people? You know? And this is something that the individual themselves is going to sense. And you go, if I hang out with gay people, guilt by association, if I hang out with all the gay people, somebody's going to know that I've been through this process. You know? And so a lot of times we do everything we can to blend in, to pass, to protect ourselves, to survive in our new role, in a much different sense than we did in our old role, but now at least having the congruity within ourselves of expressing how we want to present. But
my friend Robin, many, many years ago, spread tremendous upset because the only women that would date him were lesbian women. That because of the nature of his rebirth, heterosexual women as a rule would not date him. And so he was very upset that he had to hang out, if you will, with lesbian women.
And that can happen. That kind of thing can happen, and sometimes that's a social, sometimes that's a
learning things sometimes is the fact that that's who you've always hung out with, that's your support system, and it's hard to move outside of that. And there's a lot of that kind of thing. So but my suggestion in bringing that up is that there may be some transsexuals that we will never reach, that we will never know about, that we see as it exists now, cannot minister to, even though some of those people may desperately need the very same kind of services that we are able to provide. There's also the transvestite. What about the transvestite who's heterosexual? He's going to come and hang out with a bunch of gay people. Well, probably not, unless he's very, very comfortable with himself as who he is. And then he's going to come and probably represent himself as a friendly straight man and maybe reveal to a few people his cross-dressing. We are finding, I think, more and more trans people coming out to gay pride, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
There's starting to be a little bit more humility for people to explore beyond that, but a great number still want to make the change before men. And I had that opportunity and was very, very blessed to be able to pass really well for quite a few years and probably could have kept going, but I also had a profound sense that God called me to this from the very beginning. Why am I like this? God called me to this for the purposes of ministry and reaching people. And so for that reason, several years ago, I started really relaxing my presentation. I started relaxing my expectations that, I wanted everybody to just, see me but not see me kind of thing. And I decided, and it's really interesting because now a lot of people unconsciously pick up on it. I don't know what God's doing here, but I've gotten a lot more comfortable with being somewhere in the middle or outside or whatever is going on. But, let me see if I want to mention any other ideas about the whole where does EC fit in. My glasses. Anyway, let's go ahead and talk about that. Maybe you have some experience with some people that you know, or you've had opportunities to minister, or maybe you have had opportunities to minister that you may have missed because you're afraid or because you are uncomfortable or whatever, or maybe you have questions of me or.
I wanted to find out, because all 3.5 years in Denver, and you can see, we are. I didn't ever know, did Sue know you before you made the change?
No.
Nobody
right
at EC did?
Fairly soon after, yeah. I started at EC in October of 1987. At that time, I really went through my transition during 1986. So by spring of 87, I was pretty much full time. And then by the time I got to EC, I realized that I was lesbian. And didn't quite know what that meant or hadn't really been able to explore that. But really what I went to EC for, having started exploring the gay and lesbian issue, because originally that hadn't been my issue and hadn't been what I worked through and what God worked through with me. So I started exploring that and realized, wow, this grace even extends to them. And so even though I knew I was beginning to and was going to end up identifying as lesbian, as a woman who loves women, I went up there to evangelize, to let them know, because my only experience was one time at an MCC in the passage where I won't mention his name, but kind of more or less said, well, Jesus loves you, so you can just do anything you want and come to church on Sunday. And I wanted to let people know, no. You can be who you are, and you can love Jesus, and you can live a life of integrity. And I went up there, and man, these people, as you know from meeting these people here, they already knew that. They already love you. You're already living the life of the community. You're already ministering and sharing. You're already shining
and the Holy Spirit reveals many things as I stuck. Nobody really in my life, except for my family now, ever knew me before. I was fortunate to move to a new city and pretty much get going right away with the transition, so that as I started getting my social structure in my new home, I was doing that as Terry, which is.
I just want to make a comment about the, not only our own internalized homophobia, but our own transphobia. And I have personally been on the forefront of the lesbian community's transphobia. And I really, if there's something I can speak out against, and with great vehemence, we have no right to single out any group of people. Those of us who have been victims of oppression have no right to be oppressors. Mm-hmm. So collectively, I need to apologize and say that I've heard and seen too much of that within the GL community. The B and the T is terribly singled out and terribly prejudiced against. And I've seen the reverse. There's a movie called Better Than Chocolate, and there's a terrible song that's sung by the character who plays a transgender woman. Please forgive my language, but the title of the song, I'm not a fucking drag queen. You know, excuse me? I don't really care, you know, to have that single then to say, you know, I'm better than a drag queen. So it's just, it's the human condition.
Yeah, but I think also there may be a sense that that song may say I'm better than a drag queen, but on the other hand, I want to be understood. And so even somebody who loves and enjoys drag or whatever, if they're not that, they don't want to probably be that. And of course, you know, there's different levels of comfort. I mean, we get to the point where we go, you know, it doesn't really matter to me as much what other people think, except those that, you know, that know me and love me, that I want to be around. But there are all kinds of places in between that. So, you know, I don't want strangers to see me this way or, you know, or that way. And so it's a level of comfort that I don't think there's necessarily, I think there is a degree of this is lower, this is, you know, and in any society you get that, but I think it's also, I don't want to be mistaken for that because I'm this.
I guess what I'm saying truly is that if I have a ministry in this, it is to help people stop that bigotry and that pointing and singling out. And I've heard women say this again and again. Some will have gone through all this extensive change in surgery and hormonal treatments, etc., and still carry the male privilege.
And that's one of the things I've seen that a lot, and it makes me very uncomfortable. Because people want, they go, don't call me sir, I'm not a man. Now get my rental car here right away, because you owe it to me. And you go,
no, I'm saying,
in a dress.
But no, I'm saying that too, I've seen it. But I've also seen the reverse, and what I'm asking is, I'm asking in the name of Jesus, let us love one another. Let us not be single people like this, you know?
And that's what, I think that's what we're all asking.
Yeah.
I'll continue.
I have a question about how you feel that we as a people, especially as Christians, could be most supported towards transgender people, even before or after the big process of transition. And I think the discomfort, as you mentioned, stems from the fact that we don't really know how to interact with them. So do you have any pointers on this?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. And of course, it's hard to generalize that, but I'd say in general, you know, probably Davina is going to offer some of the same thing. Don't assume that that person is like anyone else you know. Or don't assume that because of a certain way they look, that you know how they are. And so, you know, if you have the opportunity to talk to someone, if you have the opportunity to interact with someone, find out who they are, find out their name, what do they do, what do they like, how do you find out about this group, or
or you know, kind of normal stuff, and then you'll start gaining a sense of who they are, because we're all different, you're all different. Some of you are similar, some of us have similar ideas, some of us have similar experiences. You'll probably find out that you may often have, as a gay person, similar experiences to some of the experiences and the feelings that a trans person might have, but you know, recognize within yourself that that might be a little uncomfortable, but also, you know, find out, maybe sensitively ask, well, are you comfortable talking about, you know, what you're going through, or where you are in your process. And I know that I've met people who may be defensive. You know, what do you mean by process? What, you know, I mean, what are you insinuating, you know, because they think they pass well, or they don't want people to know, or they're at some stage like that. But you can get a feel for if the person is open to talking to you, know, stuff like that. You can get that feel. If they're defensive, then you back off and kind of go back to the, you know, how's the weather today? And if they are welcoming and inviting, then, you know, ask sensitively, you know, do you mind my asking, or things like that. You know, it's just kind of, you know, I'm trying to interact, I guess, probably as you would any individual, as the person open, is the person willing, is the person comfortable? You know?
That was, I just have to say that, you know, just make a comment about your question, and I think for me, it doesn't matter, you know, labels are for jelly jars, I hate labels, and I would just say that the best way we can support trans people is the best way we can support anybody else, and everybody else, it doesn't. You know, and Chris has given great examples. Are you comfortable talking about this? So you're not just barreling with questions that the person may not be comfortable talking about. But I think we treat each other the way we would want to be treated, with unconditional love and support.
I was just wondering if you've heard of any research or anything at all about if it exists. By gender, born a certain gender, but actually with a desire to be more morbid.
You know, that's kind of interesting. I haven't seen a whole lot of that, except for the ideas more on the social construct of gender itself. Kate Bornstein with Gender Outlaw.
What is by gender?
Well, I'm not sure it exists, that's why I'm asking.
An androgyny.
Well, more of a hermaphroditic stage. I mean, you know, if someone has that desire to be bi.
So being able to not only express, but be able to function sexually and vocally.
Yeah, where the dysphoria is
Actually, being one or the other. I actually have heard of that, where some individuals have managed to keep the genitalia or whatever amount of genitalia of both sexes that they've had, so they remain into adulthood some form of what we would call a hermaphrodite or intersexed person. And I can't cite any of them, but I've heard the stories of some that have done that and function as some mixture, or you know, a little of both, or something like that. That's a good question, and I'm sure there is probably also information out there. I just don't know exactly what it would be. Do you have?
I just wanted to make a comment about last time I was in your workshop. Right after that, I take the train to Los Angeles for a 3-mile trip, and I know a lot of people on train have known for years, and I overheard some people talking about somebody that walked by and said, "Is that a man? Is that a woman?" You know. And I didn't see who it was, but I started looking at that person. And one day, they happened to be on the same car I was on, and these other fellows were too. And I got up and went in and sat down with her, and I just talked to her, says, you know, where you were, what kind of work you were doing, so I didn't even bring up the gender thing. Mm-hmm. Like that. And what happened is the other guys, when I went back sitting with them a couple days later, you know, I told him, you know how hard it is for her to have to go to work like that in the period, in the transition stage she's in. It takes a lot of guts, a lot more guts than what's been had. And they have been great. I haven't heard any comments from them since and stuff. They still talk to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that was going to be your workshop company would be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
You know, I confession time, I'm out school here, I don't call 71 long gender. You know, I don't mean to. It comes out of my mouth. I feel like a jerk. My friend Terry, I knew her before. I'm one of those people.
Yeah, now that makes a huge difference.
I knew her before.
That makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And even though you try, let me just talk to that briefly, because that happens to me more often now that I have just totally let go of. I mean, I really have decided to be myself. I've put on a much more androgynous presentation. I allowed my voice to be quite a bit deeper than it was for a while, and so particularly if somebody doesn't see me first and they hear me first, that's that first impulse, that first thing, that the first signal that gets through that says that's a male. And they look up and they see someone that may not quite have that, you know, I said it has to be a beyond convincing evidence to override that initial assessment. And if it's not beyond convincing, you know, I've got short hair now, I don't wear dangly earrings at work, I don't wear a whole lot of makeup. I have nail polish, but you know, it has to be just over. I have an apron, so you know, even my little boobies don't show. It has to be overwhelming information to contradict that initial assessment. And they'll call me he. They'll say, you know, did you give him your order and things like that. And I just let it go. And that's the comfort level I've developed with that. But because of that, you know, I've also learned tricks. When I go up to someone in a store, for instance, and want directions, I try to make sure they look at me first to get that initial assessment as a woman. Then, when they hear my voice, it doesn't overwhelmingly override that initial assessment. But if I walk up and say, excuse me, then they say, yes, sir, what do you want? And then they start going, are you dating anybody? Date Chris. But what I really wanted to say was, you know, that's why I wanted to address that the gender idea is so basic. And I know that sometimes people will slip and call me he, and we feel terrible about it. And I understand that, and I've done that. I've done that with people who said he, and I feel terrible about it. And that's okay, and you can even apologize, or you can try to let it slip under the rug. I had an experience here this weekend that was very interesting because it happened. Somebody called me he, or referred to me as he, and the other person that was present pulled me aside later and just was appalled and apologizing for this person and said that she had really just given this person that, you know, you just didn't respect her and you're just so mean and it's just such a terrible thing to do. And she felt so bad for me. And I appreciate really that kind of sensitivity to that. And I think that it was very well intentioned, and I did appreciate her defending me like that. But I also hope to let the other person know that I do understand that, you know, it's so gut level that it comes out, and it's not something you have to think about all your entire life. It's not something you have to think about on any kind of conscious level, ever, ever. And, you know, and so it happens.
But you know what? This happened to me. I'm happier. And you know, I don't consider myself feminine in any way. I'm very butchy, with ears, that kind of thing. But I'm female. I've been called sir. I don't know how many times in my life. Yes, sir. What do you? Okay. I just keep on going. I think it's a lion.
Especially over the
phone. On the phone.
Yeah.
Half my, in the trans community, I don't call them this, but in the trans community, they call them GGs, genetic girls. And I found out that at the drag bar, it wasn't even up. Last night, I saw a drag queen show on Monday here in San Diego, and then last night I saw a drag king show. But at the drag queen show, the drag queen call them RGs, real girls, because they don't have the transsexual issue. So it's real girls or dress up girls or whatever, the RGs, real girls. And I was an RG there. In the trans community, they call them GGs, genetic girls. But even most of the women I know have the experience of on the phone being called sir. Mm-hmm. And I've had people get indignant with me, even when I was presenting a much more feminine voice, you know, and I say it's ma'am, and you know, salespeople, people that have no business doing that, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, ma'am. Let me tell you about my program, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you about our program. Yeah, well, fine. You just missed the sale. Not that they were being dated anyway, but you want to make me feel bad.
Yeah.
What made you want to, you just said, cut your hair and not, you just didn't want to fool with it?
Well,
it's too much energy or?
I started playing with it as I got really comfortable with myself and as I realized how incredibly blessed I was to be able to pass at the degree that I was passing. It was such a blessing to me, and it was such a gift, and it was such a dream come true. And yet, I did have partly a sense of that there's a reason that I was made this way, and I have a pretty good sense of what the reason was for the ministry, in whatever sense that happened to come about. But I also, as a performer, I was doing some singing and stuff, and finally got comfortable enough in my singing voice to start going out. And I started finding that the more I projected and the more I used more of my natural voice, the more musical and the more passionate I could be. And I started realizing that when I'm using my natural voice, there are certain elements in that voice that are considered more masculine. Now, not always. I listen to Anne Murray, listen to some of Julie London, listen to, there are a whole bunch of performers. Listen to Natalie Schwarzkopf. If you are into classical, she's a contralto.
Right,
and
just she thinking
is, it. She's, it's the range of a baritone, amazing stuff. You know, and there are a lot of pop singers too now that are very low voiced that when you first hear, you might not know. And I started actually enjoying the idea of I'd have my hair done up and pretty pronounced makeup, but I would wear a shirt and a tie and slacks. And I started thinking, this is kind of fun playing with this, you know, different kind of gender thing. And so that was part of it that helped make me more comfortable with the fluidity or the androgyny and stuff like that. And then when I started doing these workshops, that was a part of my process of coming out, if you will, allowing myself to be more accessible as the trans side, you know, to the people who need to know more about that. So,
thank you.
I've been privileged enough to walk alongside her during this whole time. The transformation's been amazing. At first she didn't want anybody to know, only told a few selected people and hear the whispers and then I watched her get to be more comfortable with herself and have a sense of ministry. It's been a real privilege. And to attest to how long it's been, happy birthday.
Yay!
Oh.